Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, I love talking to you. You're so easy. You're so fun. You have energy and you're happy. And that is not the case for everyone. So I want to thank you and I want to tell everybody that they should listen to you because you're providing good content in a happy way.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's guest mentor, Karen Chimay, is joining me today from Dallas, Texas. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Nancy. How are you doing?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We finally have a cool day here in Dallas, so we can open up all our windows and let some fresh air in finally.
Oh, yeah. You guys have been through kind of a heat wave going on. So what's the temperature today that makes it bearable to open the windows?
We are in the 60s right now, high 60s, and we're climbing up to the low 70s. So it's beautiful and sunny.
Okay.
There's no clouds out.
Nice. Okay. And in Minnesota, we've got late 50s, early 60s. It's just a wonderful fall day. Yeah. Glad you're having a great fall day as well. So you're here. I invited you in to discuss how you can become confident in uncertain times through people strategies. And you've got a lot of experience in that area. So Karen is a two-time internationally published author, speaker, and strategist. Her strong knowledge of corporate culture, human capital strategy, energy psychology, and communication skills allow her to strategize with power players on the best way to create a thriving business and, in turn, personal life. Karen does this work as a business performance advisor with Insperity and coach in her private practice. Her specialty is collaborating with her clients to remove their personally imposed hurdles and uplevel their game. Karen has many skills necessary in working with the corporate environment, including stress management, hypnotherapy, crisis intervention, and various other methodologies. Her credentials include a degree in business administration, advanced Scrum Master Certification, a member of Mensa International, immediate on-scene crisis intervention specialist, and you're certified in feng shui for real estate. Awesome. So I learned a little bit more about being a Scrum Master. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works for small business owners or any business owner?
Scrum Master specifically. I can do that. So the scrum mastering in general is kind of like project management taken to a whole new level. So any business that has project managers running projects will benefit from Scrum. Scrum has been in general used in IT. That's where it was popularized.
It's a technology. It's a software, isn't it?
No, Scrum is not software. A Scrum Master is kind of like an advanced project manager.
Okay.
So it's a way to run a team and run a project through from start to finish.
So, do you have a framework for how you work? Is that how it's put together?
Yes. So just like project managers have a framework for how they work a project,
yeah,
a Scrum Master also has a framework, but Scrum in general revolves around an entire organization's buy-in. So we could talk about this for hours and hours, but it requires for a Scrum organization or agile organization to run effectively. There has to be buy-in from the top all the way to the bottom. It's not like hiring a project manager and having them sit in the business development side and do things on their own.
Scrum, they have to buy into the framework.
Agile organizations. Well, they're involved. It's not just buying in and supporting. They're fully involved. So the people at the top come to certain meetings and lead the vision or provide the vision and lead the organization. And then from there, the orders are taken and dispersed and then everybody comes back. So it really is an organization-wide effort versus a team-by-team effort.
Oh, I see. That makes so much sense. And recently, you've begun kind of creating some short videos to address different topics, like what is a professional employer organization or co-employment? What is it? Or cafeteria plan section 125 testing or multiple state employers? How does that work? And insurance, what do you do? Do you have it brokered or is it direct to carry? So you go into some specifics on each topic, kind of that fits under the umbrella of human resources, which is where Insperity, the company that you're working in right now, in addition to running your own business, where you handle HR functions.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
Good.
So Insperity is a professional employer organization, PEO, and that is full HR outsourcing. And what I realized as I'm talking to business owners is they fall into one of two categories. Either they have never heard of a PEO and don't know what it is, and a whole bunch of education needs to happen, or they have heard of a PEO and they don't know what questions to ask. Because when you're sitting across the table from a salesperson, they're going to tell you what they think, either they think you need to hear or they think you want to hear, depending on who the salesperson is. But they're not going to go necessarily into the full education that you should have. Not because they're doing anything maliciously, but because there are so many aspects that can be touched and so many questions that can be asked, they could easily take up an entire week educating a business owner on the things that they need to know. So I saw this need and I realized that many business owners would actually benefit greatly from partnering with a professional employer organization, and we can get into that a little later. But they should know what questions to ask so that when they start talking to different companies, they know how to differentiate. Is this a company that I want to partner with, or are they not a company that I want to partner with based on what the company offers? Because not every company offers exactly the same thing. So I created this YouTube channel and I started putting up videos about individual items. I don't want to overwhelm people as they're listening. Most of the videos on there are 5 minutes or under, but I address each item that comes up individually. So granted, it's kind of at a higher level, but at least it gives a business owner an idea of, oh, I should be asking these kinds of questions about the benefits or Section 125 testing. What exactly is it? And does it matter if my partner takes care of that? Should I know about it? Is it something that I need to ask, do they do that or do they not? Versus assuming that they will because they say they do human resources. So all of the videos were created in order to empower business owners to ask the right questions and know what it is that they're looking for in a partner.
Yeah, I love the way you put them together. And I like the succinctness of it and to focus on just a few minutes on one topic so that, you know, the person who's taking it in, you don't get in overwhelm at all. You're engaged and you're learning the content that you're talking about. I would like to acknowledge today's sponsor, Sally Doyle. She sponsored many of our podcasts. Thank you, Sally. Great Lakes Bookkeeping not only provides relief from the tedious bookkeeping tasks, but also uses the information as a roadmap to advise owners of opportunities that can help their business. With over 20 years of experience and expertise, owners trust Sally to help them achieve their goals and dreams. Right now, you can reach her to get a profit analysis and cash flow projections. If you've been a regular listener, you heard from Matt Blank, a vice president and relationship manager for U.S. Bank's Twin Cities Emerging Business Group, say that small business owners are not creating cash flow projections. It is critical. So call Sally, get your cash flow projections in place for 2021 and beyond. Great Lakes Bookkeeping, 1-651-208-8151 or greatlakesbookkeeping.com. All right. So I am so excited, Karen, that you're here. In our discussion prior to today's podcast, I got the sense that you have a lot of talent in a variety of different areas. And so we decided that what people would probably be most interested in right now is to dig into some people's strategy guidelines, especially during this time of uncertainty. But before we kind of pull out some nuggets and strategies for you as a listener, I'd like you to learn a little bit more about Karen's background. Karen, so if you used five words to describe your caretakers or your parents who raised you, how would you describe them? What would be the five words?
Five words for both or five words for each?
So did you grow up in a two-parent home?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so five words each.
So my mother was very generous and caring, smart. She was a chemistry teacher. So very right-brained, very left-brained, not right-brained. And my father was, again, generous software engineer. He was, he's my hero. He really was. He took care of us and did well. He did a very good job. It's more than five words, but he's my hero, a hero software engineer.
Well, that says a lot. Wow. And who else was in your household growing up?
I have a brother and a sister, both younger than me.
Mm. Okay.
Yes.
What are they up to in the world?
So my brother is a software engineer, like my dad. And my sister, she plays with guns. She works at a firing range and gets to play with guns all day and tell people what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do.
Yeah, I imagine it's pretty popular in Texas.
It is. Yes, there are a lot of guns and bullets in Texas.
Yeah. So what were you interested in growing up?
I was very interested in problem solving, which works out really well because that's just one of my natural skills. But I loved the word problems, you know, the kind that are two mothers and two daughters are walking down the street, or three generations of women, two mothers and two daughters are walking down the street. What's the minimum number of people that you could have, and those kinds of things?
Yeah.
I love the brain teasers, but not the basic ones, the ones that made you think, that didn't involve a lot of math. Those worked for me.
Okay. Did you grow up in Dallas?
I did not, actually. I grew up in Southern California, and I was born in Israel, and we moved to Southern California. And I grew up in Southern California, and I moved to Dallas in 2012, at the end of 2012.
Oh.
So, yes, I had quite the interesting childhood.
So your family immigrated here from Israel?
Yes.
Okay. And how old were you when that occurred?
I was six.
Okay. Do you remember living in Israel?
Yes, I do. I still have a little bit of family there, and we used to go there regularly, so it didn't disappear from my life.
Oh,
it
I see.
Mm-hmm. Happened to disappear from my everyday occurrence.
Right. All right. And what part of Israel were you in?
We were in Haifa.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about that. What's the community like?
The culture there today is very different. Haifa is it's the port city in the north, and it's a gorgeous, gorgeous place. The water's blue. You can see down into you can see down into the ground. It's not murky like you would have in Houston or the Pacific, depending on the day. But the water's gorgeous. The weather's beautiful. Actually, the best way to describe Israel's climate is Southern California. They both sit on the same latitude.
Oh,
and
sure.
So, as far as comparisons, it felt a lot like Southern California. Great weather. The whole country is beautiful, and there's a lot of history there because so many different cultures lived there at one point or another. Conquered that area or left it. So there's just architecture and historical artifacts everywhere. So for history buffs, that is definitely some place to go.
Mm. And what brought you from Southern California to Dallas? Was that on your own or with your family?
It was actually on my own. At the time when I relocated, there was not a lot of work in California. And I found a job in Dallas. I found a company that reloaded me here.
Okay.
And was willing to pay the full relocation expense. And so I moved. I came to where the work was.
Hmm. Is that through Insperity?
It's not to Insperity, actually. It was to a health reinsurer. I left them shortly after I moved to Dallas, and I became a licensed insurance agent. Still hold my license today, but I don't sell anything. I'm not appointed with anyone. But that license, I don't know how I got the license. I'm not sure how I passed the test. I accredit that to God. And I refuse to give up any gift that God bestowed upon me. So I do my CEs, my continuing education every couple of years just to maintain that license because someday I know it'll come in handy somehow. And if not, it's just fun to say I'm a licensed insurance agent.
Right. Exactly. One more thing to add to your bio. What else would you like to know about your background regarding how you are where you are right now? I know that you published a book. What's the title of it?
I published a couple of books. And I will give a disclaimer here. It's nothing bad, but they do live in the metaphysical world because I've had a lot of metaphysical training as well. So for people who are not into the weirdo woo-woo stuff, you can tune out for about 30 seconds. And for people who are, the two books are out there. They're on Amazon. The first one is called You Want to Be Psychic? Hang on tight. And the second one, I thought it was a fun title.
Yes. Excellent.
And the second one is called What Your Reiki Teacher Never Taught You.
What Your Reiki Teacher Never Taught You. Oh, and what was one of the key findings that you discovered?
In Reiki. They're both.
What you were not taught.
What Your Reiki Teacher Never Taught You was a book of rules or a book of guidelines and principles that a lot of people are not taught because they don't have exposure to the more advanced energy dealings and practices that I got exposed to. And I started realizing that there are a lot of things that you just can't teach a beginner. There are also a lot of things that beginners would benefit from knowing, but just aren't told or isn't discussed. For example, a lot of beginners believe that people who are more spiritually advanced and have gone through a lot of trainings just float around in a cloud all day and are happy and see rainbows and unicorns and sunshine, and that's their existence. And that's not the reality. The reality is that everybody has challenges. We're human beings, and it doesn't matter how much training you have. You might be able to overcome a challenge easier, but even those of us who are very, very advanced still have bad days, and we still suffer from the same things that everybody else does. So it's not all rainbows, unicorns, and sitting on a cloud.
Yeah, well, in doing the Reiki work, like I'm into Reiki meditation now and just kind of exploring the Japanese tradition there. And you're right about, you know, there's an undercurrent of rules and how to work with energy in a very unique way that keeps it the meditation more active, I find. and I'm staying more engaged in the process. But there is a lot to learn about the profession itself and how to utilize the Japanese technique in a very spiritual and a very mind training type exercise.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not just Reiki focused, but I called it that because I found that Reiki happens to be the vanilla of energy work. So unless someone is brought in by a friend who's really into Trinity or Theta or something else, the place where they'll land because it's so ubiquitous is Reiki. And so I figured if I throw that out, most people will at least have heard of it. And if they haven't, that's the vanilla version that they will encounter first.
A great way to express that. Yeah. All right. Yes. And you have a website, so for your private practice. So I'll put that in. And I really encourage people also to check out some of your blogs. You're just doing a lot of interesting work, and I like the way you're kind of expressing it and putting it out in the world. It makes it easy for people to understand a wide variety of topics. So one of the things that you had alluded to earlier in when we started our conversation a few minutes ago was professional employer organizations. And so could you define that for us?
Yes, a professional employer organization is a company. At a high level, it's a company that can take over most of the HR functions of a business. So they are an outsourcing partner, kind of like a managed service provider can handle a lot of your IT for you. A professional employer organization is an HR outsourcer.
And during this time of COVID, what has happened with Inspirity? Has the business changed in how they're working, or how are you working differently?
I think the only thing really that has changed for us is that we are now working remotely versus being in an office every day, but very little has changed as far as what we're doing and what we're up to, because we don't have the luxury of shutting down and changing our practices. We service too many clients and they rely on us to be consistent. And that has been the most important piece for us, is to make sure that there are no disruptions visible at all for them. And we've done that in many different ways. So for us, really the biggest difference is just working from home versus coming into an office.
So one of the things that is our focus in our conversation today is kind of some people's strategies, like how to address the human resource needs within your business. A professional employer organization is an option where you can hand off some of the HR responsibilities and pay an organization to do that. How many employees is there a cutoff of when you should for sure hire a professional employer organization? It would be, what is your take on that?
So our company specifically starts at about 5 employees. Now, there is really no cutoff as far as, or there is no floor or ceiling for when you need to. What we've noticed is the laws start changing at about 15 employees. So there are two things to consider, not just how many employees you have. What a business owner needs to think about is, are they willing to be an expert in every aspect of human resources and the law and running payroll and providing benefits? You know, like, are you willing to educate yourself on how health insurance works and all the laws that govern you having an employee? A lot of people start thinking about it once they get to about 5 employees, because that's the point where they're going to hire people that aren't family, right? Up until then, it's going to be mom, dad, brother, sister, cousins, uncles, any sucker from within the family that you can pull aboard to work for you. But at around 5 employees, it shifts to, okay, we need to hire somebody external, even if it's just a receptionist. At that point, you've taken on a liability that you may or may not want to shoulder the risk of. So the question for a business owner is, how much risk are you willing to keep on your plate in order to not have an expert run it for you? Or how much is it worth to you? I know an owner of a company who, he has about 60 employees, and he travels all around the country, and every Friday afternoon, he will jump on a plane and go back home just so he can physically sign everybody's paychecks. In my world, that's insanity. For him, it makes perfect sense. But in my world, it's complete insanity. The amount of money and time and stress that is spent on having to be at home to physically sign everybody's paychecks every Friday far outweighs however much money you're going to spend to an outsourcer who can just take care of that for you and you never have to think about it again.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is cost versus benefit. It goes beyond how many employees they should have. Some people don't want the headache at 5 employees. Some people at 100 employees say, you know what, I can handle this on my own. I think I'm an expert. Leave me alone. So,
well, don't they have usually somebody who's handling HR at that?
There are several problems that come up with that. Generally, a business owner who has somebody who's running HR does not have somebody fully competent and qualified. They might have an HR person, but does that HR person keep abreast of every single law that changes every single day? And if it's a company that has employees in multiple states, some people have remote employees. Is your HR person keeping well abreast of every single HR rule that is coming up in law? Or are they going to Google? What we found is most internal HR people are actually getting the information that they need off of Google. They're not SHRM certified. They're not OSHA, Society of Human Resource Management certified. They're not OSHA certified, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. So they're wearing a lot of hats that don't fit just so the business owner can save, in my opinion, I could be completely wrong, but it's so the business owner can save a little bit of money and say, yes, I have an HR person, which is different than having an entire toolbox for that HR person to go pull from.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Can you describe what is in a cafeteria plan and your people strategy guidelines around that?
Now, when you say my people strategy, is for Insperity or what I would recommend to my clients on my own?
I think both would be good.
Okay. So a cafeteria plan is also known as a Section 125 plan. A Section 125 plan is something that was, Section 125 refers to the IRS code Section 125. And what that is it's a plan that offers employees choices between getting compensation in cash or as part of a benefits plan. If the employee is opting into the benefits plan, the money that they pay towards those benefits will always be contributed pre-tax. And the options within that plan will include medical, dental, vision, HSAs, FSAs, that's a health savings account or an FSA, life, disability, 401k, dependent FSAs as well. And all of those will be rolled into what's called a cafeteria plan or a Section 125 plan.
Yeah. So your personal guidelines regarding that or your personal strategies that you would suggest in that area?
So one of my first little pay attention warnings kind of things is if you're looking at a professional employer organization to partner with, ask them, do they provide Section 125 testing? This is something that can land you in a lot of hot water if it's not done, and not every single PEO will do this for you. So one of the first questions you should ask is, do you offer that? what I would suggest is if you want to, especially today, attract any kind of solid employees, you're going to have a cafeteria plan in place. And you're going to need to provide solid options. So the cheapest deductible or the highest deductible, cheapest medical plans might not be the way to go if you're looking for solid talent.
Yeah.
So find a partner that offers a full, robust cafeteria plan and offer that to your employees.
Great. Okay. Any other, couple of other tips that you have regarding the cafeteria plan that you would suggest through Inspirity?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
or you're on your own.
So, right. A business owner needs to consider how much they're going to be contributing to the cafeteria plan, what their personal, not what they themselves are going to be contributing out of their paycheck, but what their company contribution will be. A reasonable contribution is about 75%. Any owner who contributes 100% is seen as an amazing, amazing company to work for, because that's rare. So you want to consider how much burden you're going to take off of your employees' paychecks when you're putting that strategy in place, because the way you take care of them will ultimately shape how they take care of you as their employer.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. And how does a business owner's values play into the cafeteria planning? What have you noticed regarding that?
What do you mean their values?
Well, their core values for their company, what they believe in, and also some of their personal values I see play out in a business through just the treatment of their employees, but also the plans that they offer. And like you were talking about, you know, the contributions of the company toward different plans, different parts of the, you know, the insurance plans that are picked, or some companies pick up the dental insurance, some don't. So what values do you see that business owners are agreeing to? Does that play out, or how does that play out in when you're putting together cafeteria plans?
So when you're putting together cafeteria plans in general, if we're talking Inspirity specifically, it is a defined plan. It's an all or nothing kind of package. You don't pick and choose. It's not on an a la carte menu.
Oh, okay.
You can tell a lot about with Inspirity. We are not an a la carte menu. This is the benefits package. Period. Now, within that package, there are multiple options for health insurance. There are different deductibles and different copays and all sorts of options that you can choose from. However, if they're going with the co-employment model, then they get a package. When I say they get a package, they can say, we want a whole bunch of stuff, but we don't want dental and vision. They can leave that off. We want to include tuition reimbursement. So there are a couple things that they can add or deselect, but as a whole, everybody gets life insurance, everybody gets disability, everybody gets medical. It's kind of a package that goes together. And I think a business owner's values are very well reflected in what it is that they're offering their employees. You can tell if they're not offering life, vision, dental, accident,
disability,
kind of thing. So are they offering an entire package, or are they picking and choosing? I only want to pay for health insurance, but I'll buy the cheapest plan out there and I won't offer anything else. Or are they not offering anything? So how are they people-centric? Do they care about their people or do they not? Because people are an investment in general. So what are they willing to invest into their people to make sure that their people are taken care of? And I also see that play out in training and development and succession planning. So as far as the cafeteria plan, that's just one item that you can see, but how they look at the cafeteria plan might also speak to, this is the value I'm going to place on your personal growth and within the company, or this is the value that I'm going to place on keeping you as an employee in the long run.
Well, and part of what I've been seeing is, you know, during COVID, you know, some businesses are faring really well. Some are barely making it. So part of their core values is to be people-centric. But if you don't have the cash flow supply, because it's been ultimately, you know, restricted, it's either, you know, the plan or, you know, so there's a lot of juggling that's going on right now and reconstructing plans. Do you think that at some point medical insurance will be just like we will individually take care of that ourselves instead of having that a provider through a business providing that?
I don't see that happening.
You don't? Why
honestly,
not?
Honestly, because people have, in general, people have the option today. The problem is when you're looking at health insurance, we'll just take health insurance because that's the easiest example. When you're buying on the individual market, your prices are going to be infinitely higher than if you can buy through a group of 400,000 lives. So it doesn't make sense financially for people to go out and buy insurance on their own, which will not be anywhere near as robust as they can by grouping together.
Well, the difficulty that I'm seeing is that there's more and more employers that are going to independent contracting or having smaller companies with people, or there's a larger turnover in people. For some employers, it just doesn't make sense to provide the type of insurance if they've got a high turnover rate. But I guess there's lots of different ways to carve that out. But I'm just seeing with our society being more mobile and people are, and we're in a gig society, so people are having a lot of different types of jobs at the same time. And how can employers, you know, adapt to that?
Correct. Well, I think there's a very important distinction that has to be made here, because it's very important to not confuse terminology and concept. What you're not talking about is employers. You're talking about contractors. An employer is somebody who has W-2 employees. Those people are regulated and there are rules placed around them that contractors don't have. And so I think it's very important to, the conversation that we're having is about employers, and that then goes directly to the heart of what is an employee, how are they defined, and what can you do and what can't you do when you're dealing with an employee versus this is just some random person that I hired for a job. And once that job is over, I can let them go or I can keep them on for another job.
Right.
So I think as employees, no, you're not going to see people leaving company group benefits to go shop on the open market. The plans that are out on the open market are not worth spending money on unless you absolutely have to.
Oh, that's good to know.
But as independent contractors, you don't have a choice.
And if you've got a large part of your staff working as part-time employees and you're offering the cafeteria plan, what are your suggestions around that? Does that happen very often, or are the cafeteria plans only offered to full-time employees?
Those are only offered to full-time employees.
Okay.
Their part-time employees are not eligible for cafeteria plan.
Okay. Very good. All right. I think that we had one other item on here, but I think I will move that to our next conversations, which I wanted to talk about virtual assistants, but I think that it was more important to kind of explore cafeteria plans a little bit more and really sort out, you know, that cafeteria plans are to be offered to full-time employees. And it's a number of different things that you can offer them through human resource options for your medical and dental plans and that kind of thing that really build out your robust salaries. And it's, I think business owners, it's when they go from five to more employees, it's a huge planning process to cover the financial gap or what's required to cover for employees at that level. Do you find that there's some education that you provide to employers to help them with that leap?
There is a lot of education. Actually, on my YouTube channel, I think last week I uploaded a video. This one is longer than 3 to 5 minutes because it was a presentation I gave to the Asian Chamber of Commerce here. But it talks about the business growth life cycle. And so that content is very relevant. A lot of business owners don't think about that early on. A lot of business owners don't think about it well into their business running, we'll call it. But I go through the different stages of business ownership, from entrepreneurship all the way to exit, and what challenges they'll run into. So there's that's a whole conversation in itself. I refer them to the video because they will get a lot of good information there.
Great. Okay. I'll include that video in the notes. All right. Well, this has been really informative, really an important conversation as business owners are growing their businesses and expanding, especially when it comes to, you know, having five or more full-time employees, that taking a look at a professional employer organization, you know, can really make a lot of sense to make business ownership, you know, more manageable. So you don't have to be an expert in everything, which is where a lot of business owners will end up losing focus. Is there any other tip that you want to add before we close out our conversation?
I think that actually is it's a good place to end this particular conversation. We've covered a lot, and I don't want to muddy the water with other things.
Yeah, so, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah.
In my head. But I don't want to muddy the water here.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah. Okay, thanks so much, Karen, for your insights today. It's just been a pleasure talking with you and kind of picking your brain a little bit about how we can get some more strategies into our businesses, and as people are projecting out into the future. This is a really critical point of, especially if you're expanding from five to or more employees, you know, when you're bumping it up past five, it's a different business model that you want to put in place. And Inspirity and Karen Chimay are great resources for you to in the future. All right. And the videos will be helpful with the business growth life cycle. So you can keep that in mind as you're growing your business and shifting to stay relevant in these times of COVID-19 pandemic, which is going to go on and on for a while. All right. So thanks so much. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Thanks Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Mon Frere, brother from another mother. And we'll see you next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. I totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to involve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our WeMentor self-leadership community. You can subscribe for free through WeMentor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a We Mentor mini lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in We Mentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out wementor.com. You can email me, Nancy, at wementor.com, or call me 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening, and we'll see you next week.